He's hit as he throws. Pass is intercepted by Vanderbilt from the 30 to the 20 to the 10 to the 5. And it's a touchdown for Vanderbilt. Long pass down the center of the field is caught by Humphreys at the 5. He's in for a touchdown. 16-0 Vanderbilt.
Hold on, wait a minute.
It's returnable. Jesus at the 3 to the 5 to the 10. Left turn 15, 20, 25, 30, 35 to the 40. Oh my goodness. Now down to the 10. Jet Thomas to the 5. Touchdown. And the Rebels are on the scoreboard. On a read option. Here's Miami to the 15. 10, 5. Touchdown. Touchdown Rebels. Jaden Miami brings it in. And the Rebels surge ahead 29-17. The snap, the spot, the kick is on the way, and the kick is good! The Rebels, with 5 seconds left, have retaken the lead 40-37 over Vanderbilt. Oh, baby!
From the Findlay Toyota Studio, it's Cofield & Company
on ESPN Las Vegas.
Yep, a lot of Holy Toledo moments in the game for UNLV. A win over the SEC. I know it's Vanderbilt, but did you see UNLV football? What exactly did it say?
It just means more.
It just means more.
Oh, yeah.
They sent out a tweet.
Is that the SEC thing?
Those guys are really funny. Yeah, they just show Rebels win. It just means more. Yeah. And then I had to retweet it and go, SEC, SEC. Because Vandy, I'm trying to think of the other football schools, but there's a lower third of that conference at any given time. Their fans don't care. They still puff out their chest about SEC and like, right. You don't get to do that. Bama.
Oh.
Georgia. Florida when it's good. LSU. Tennessee when it's good. They get to do it. The 6-win teams out of the conference, you don't get to go SEC, SEC. I've said it before. It'd be like Rebel fans, you know, on San Diego State success. You know, Mountain West.
During the NCAA tournament run.
We're all one. No, we're not.
Two things. I need to follow up on Aaron Rodgers. Don't forget. Second, the broadcast, to your point, so I don't know if you went back and watched CBS broadcast because you were there, obviously. After Miami's interception looked like it was going to end the game, I think it was number 24 who intercepts it for Vandy, the camera pans immediately to a woman in the stands, an old Vandy lady, going, like, in the face of like some Rebels fan, going, 24, like doing this. And I was like, who are you? This is the only bit of semblance, like a happiness that you get. Hawaii went there to Nashville and pushed you to the brink, and you're celebrating. Get out of here.
Okay, well, hold on a second. Hold on a second.
What?
Did you look at the roster? She's wearing a 24.
So you know which lady I'm talking about.
The big interception was by a guy named Nicholas Rinaldi.
Okay.
It was his mom.
I don't care.
What do you mean you don't care?
No.
She doesn't get to celebrate?
No. How do you know it was her?
It was.
How do you know?
They made reference on the broadcast repeatedly that's his family. That was his mom. By the way, not that old, and I won't go down that path.
Well, then it was a different lady. I'm still right.
It was his mom.
That wasn't
She's like,
mom.
I told you. I think to her husband.
No, she was looking at you at UNLV.
No, Steve, now you're giving her too much credit.
There was a big guy right next to her. She points. Like, I told you.
No, she was starting stuff. She knew that nobody was going to come back at her.
Just back down.
Never. Never.
She was enveloped in Vandy fans. All 30 of them. There are probably about 500 Vandy fans there in the one corner.
It wasn't his mom.
I'll let it breathe. You know it was his mom. What'd you have on Rodgers? You want to push back on Steve Kim?
No, not
about
really.
About being honest about his stance on vax?
No, I mean, I did want to push back on that because, yes, you know, he said Aaron Rodgers like one of the first open athletes against the vax. He wasn't. He wimped out about it.
Eventually he was.
Yes, eventually.
Yeah.
Exactly.
But when he first said it, he kind of hid behind yes.
But no,
I am inoculated.
The thing I wanted to push back on was actually the sound that you played of him taking the shot at Olbermann and saying, hey, oh, go take your fifth vax, Keith, or whatever, you know, Kevin, whatever. Keith, sorry. But what I wanted to push back was, it's so weird. The other day on my TikTok algorithm, you know what popped up? It was the Pardon My Take guys in an old interview with Aaron Rodgers where Big Cat from Barstool asks him in jest, how many people do you think you killed when comes to spreading corona because he didn't want to take it? Huh. And Aaron Rodgers took offense to the question. Oh, don't ask me that. That's not fair. No. You want to sit there and make fun of people about not taking the shot? Well, people are going to make fun of you for not taking it. Like, it's a two-way street, dude. Don't get all, you can't ask me that question. That's not fair. And then go and tell Keith Olbermann, go take your fifth booster. It's a two-way street, buddy.
Okay.
Steve, that's your quarterback. You going to defend him at all?
And it's very much, really quick, before people get upset, my stance is, if you want to dish it, take it. Right. That's my thing. Has nothing to do with it. If you want to dish it, take it.
Of course, you know I have A-Rod is back in any situation, even if I have to revise history and what I thought in the past. That's if he's coming back to the Jets. If not...
What are you talking about? He's back in December, right?
Good luck. Well, the,
January.
His experimental surgery.
It's the same surgery Cam Akers got, and look at how good it did
do
him.
Do you think...
could be the fastest in terms of recovery from an Achilles. That would mean the Jets have to make the playoffs, though, so it really doesn't matter if he's back in January.
Isn't there like an old like movie or something where somebody gets like the heart of a certain animal and then they become like really good at the sport or something like that?
Can we look that up? Can the vast research crew look that up? Please? So I would like to go back in history and bring up something I said on Wednesday. Do you remember when I mentioned the Michigan game and Maiava getting in, the backup quarterback?
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And what I felt good about with UNLV football now. I'm leading you into the comment of...
I think this is what you said, right? Yeah. You don't think... You thought at one point that the season would be resting on Doug Brumfield
or bust.
Yeah, Brumfield or bust.
And if he got hurt, look out.
And you don't think that anymore.
Well, I didn't think that. Yeah, I didn't think that after the Michigan game and seeing him a little bit in the Bryant game, that my confidence in number two, and even watching him in practice, they have a number two who is prepared.
And
I think Harrison Bailey could be a two. I think... Cam Friel could be a two, but last year they were not prepared. The game was too fast for them, and we're gonna talk a little more about how they practice. But yeah, I felt pretty good about Jaden Maiava if he had to take over, and then lo and behold, Brumfield goes down in the first quarter, and Maiava goes out there, and yeah, you know, he did have some hiccups. And if you listen, this is why you want to listen to the games. And thanks to Russ Langer and Learfield with the calls there, you want to listen to. And I thought Ross Tucker and the other dude were good, but. Caleb, as a former quarterback, has so many good things that he breaks down, but he's critical. I'm not going to say hypercritical. Maybe he's hypercritical on the quarterback position because a lot of his theme during the game on run plays, they had so many run plays that got screwed up by miscommunication or lack of execution. And he pointed to, hey, you know what, Maiava's just – he's a little shaky right now in terms of the mesh point. So there's still things to work on. And then, sometimes he just – my whole thing with Maiava when I watch him, he – positive, he's a gambler. Negative, he's a gambler.
Yes.
Right? And he just never saw that defender, 24, right? He never saw that defender on the interception with a minute left. He didn't. But the crazy thing about him is he bounces back, right? They need something or they're going to overtime. And his first pass with a chance with whatever was left, 42 seconds left. The first pass is like into three guys for Vandy at that point. And then I hear Caleb, because I'm listening to the game when I'm on the sidelines, and he's like, oh, you wonder right now if they're talking about just going overtime. I'm like, maybe they should. But then, three plays later, he throws a friggin' bomb. Pretty good spot. Great catch by Ricky White. He's just the kid supremely confident. But let's get into what's going on right now.
Do you think that lady was screaming, by the way, when he completed that dime down the sideline?
When Vandy fell apart. I don't know. I wonder where he was on that play. Well, he was on the other side of the field on the interception, so I wonder where he was on that play. We'll have to go back and look at the film. This is right after the game, press conference, post-game press conference, and coaches are going to keep things close to the vest. This was Odom talking about Doug Brumfield and his health following the game.
Yeah, I think he's going to be cleared and ready to go. It seemed like all tests were in a good way for him. So that's positive. We'll obviously be in, tomorrow morning and get another round of tests on any guys that had injuries. And hopefully we can at some point get to a healthy football team and continue to get the reps that we need to play winning ball.
So UNLV beats Vanderbilt over the weekend, 40-37. Brumfield goes down in the first quarter. He did come out at halftime, and he was out there in the second half. And his condition, I'll say, was up and down. When he came out of the locker room, I was like, whoa, this guy's going to be out for a while. He's, like, hobbled. He's, like, doubled over. Not doubled over, but he's just kind of leaning over. I'm like, man, this is – I didn't think his breathing, Dr. Cofield, I didn't think his breathing looked great or sounded great. When I heard Odom say that after the game, I was like, I don't know about that. But I think part of that is also there's no controversy.
Right.
It's all calm down. And also, you got to preach patience. Guys can recover pretty quickly. But when I say his condition in the second half was up and down, Doug came out and he was like, whoa, like really beat up, Doug Brumfield. And then Maiava started to do some good things. And then like 10 minutes later, I see him. He's like slapping hands with him. And he's like, close this out. Close this out. I'm like, wow, you got a burst of energy.
Well, that's good leadership, you would think, right?
It's great leadership. But I also think there's a realization like, oh.
Yeah.
Okay. I can't be out too long. You know, you like it hits you like,
sure.
Whoa. But he wasn't. He was channeling it the right way.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, they were incredibly supportive on the sideline. The players were. Actually, in two cases. Brumfield was in that injury tent. In the first half, for it seemed like 12 minutes. And it was just player after player after player running over, like ducking the tent, see how he was. I thought that was really cool. Jalen St. John went in three times, offensive lineman. Donnie Lester went over. I know Vincent Davis went over, wide receiver went over. So that was cool. And then whatever was going on with Mayava in the second half, good or bad, there was always someone in his ear talking to him. And I thought, I sent out the picture earlier today, when he threw that interception with a minute left, they're done. It's a loss. He just blew it. It's a loss after all the good play. Loss. And he had multiple guys come over and talk to him when he was sitting on the bench. Then he's standing up, and Cam Friel probably talked to him for like 3 minutes. Fellow Hawaiian in a battle for the two job, and he was like hugging him, you know, like just good pep talk. That's why I've always liked Cam Friel, and I'll mention this whenever I can. He is a high-character guy, and you can see – you find out how people are – it doesn't say it all, but you find out a lot about him. When things are going badly in football, it's an emotional game. And Cam Friel is always like he's like a robot, but I mean that in a good way. He just looks at you right in the eye sure. Every time he talks to a player, you know, good or bad. If it's someone in front of him, you know, doing it, or when he was playing. So he's a quality guy. Here's Odom with the follow-up today on Brumfield. There wasn't much that happened today with practice with Brumfield, so here's Barry Odom.
I would suggest that tomorrow he'll be able to go through more of practice than he did today. I think we'll see steady improvement each day, and hopefully that we can get him before the end of the week. We'll get him in position to play really well. If he's healthy, he's our starting quarterback. And a lot of that will determine on how well he can get, how he feels, and then has he had enough reps during the week to be able to play the way that position needs to play. So, whoever is at quarterback, I know that our guys will be excited. They'll prepare really well, and we'll do our best to get the team in position that we understand whoever's playing, the 10 guys around them need to play really, really well. If we do that, we can be an efficient offense.
Okay. So that was two cuts kind of cobbled together back-to-back. Mm-hmm. What'd you hear?
I heard that there is Barry Odom being pretty staunch in the fact that Doug Brumfield's their guy.
Okay. Did you hear he's going to play on Saturday?
I heard if he's healthy, he's going to play on Saturday.
And he gets enough reps in.
Yes.
Which, if he doesn't get better by, say, Wednesday.
Right.
Do you roll him out there? Because our buddy Mike Romala sent out, Barry Odom says Doug Brumfield's initial test came back clean, should be good. Oh, this was after the game. Good to go this week in practice. What I heard today is, I wouldn't put a percentage on it, but Brumfield's got to come a long way to ensure that he's starting. Odom is very optimistic at the beginning of the week, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But we have heard, we definitely heard, and I know, well, I heard one thing and other people heard something different. At the beginning of last week, he talked about the left side of the line being back. Yeah, they're practicing.
Yeah.
That didn't mean they were back. And then when the game started, Jalen St. John didn't start and McAhaley didn't start. He did play most of the game, though. So I think sometimes we're not really listening to coaches because they're also going to be coy about what's going on and leave room so that if something does change, and things change during the week.
Well, it goes back to the Jane Norvell cut, right? Initially, you heard Jane Norvell blaming his players.
Yep.
I heard Jane Norvell complaining about officiating.
Yes.
So it's like the game of telephone. Sometimes you don't understand it. But I'll say this. Look, I think when you're in Odom's position and with this team, you know, people might view this as a controversy. I think what you view it as, and if you're Odom, you view it as, I'm comfortable if Doug's not ready, mm-hmm. that Mayava is going to be our guy next week when we go to UTEP,
yep.
given the way that he's played. Because I would also state, and I think we should be clear, Doug has not gotten the shot yet to really show. Because like, even at the beginning of the game against Vandy, was he great? No. But was he also getting pummeled because they were blitzing him and he was getting no protection whatsoever and no chance to really get ready and set as a quarterback? Yep. I don't think so. So that's one of the things that if you're kind of looking around, you go, no, he's played better than Brumfield. I'd argue you'd still want a larger sample size from Doug as a quarterback to really make the change to Jaden Mayava going forward.
And fans will do that.
Right.
They will make a quick judgment and they're like, get him out. That's it.
He was getting destroyed.
I mean, I sent out a picture of him being, you know, helped off the field, and someone sent to me, hey, maybe this isn't the right time, but I'm done with him. I'm like, all right, calm down. Okay? Calm down. And it was almost like, let's see what the freshman has. It wasn't like he's as good. It was like, what do we have to lose? But, you know, the score was also 17-0. Yeah. So it's like people get hopeless so quickly.
I mean, given the history of the program, I will say, well, I guess you kind of understand it.
So here's the thing. I just mentioned I had more confidence in Maiava if Brumfield got hurt. I like Arroyo. You know that. I'm like, well, you know, one of the few people here who talk about Marcus Arroyo. And I'm going to talk, I'll talk about some positives later. But, man, last year when they had to rely on twos and threes at times, there was a drop-off.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, it's a lot of the same guys who are the twos and threes. In some cases, it's guys who are playing now that UNLV had on the roster, and they didn't use them. They weren't ready to go, or they didn't trust them. I want you to listen to Odom here, because you and I have been at a lot of practices. And the way they practice is different than the last staff. And they've stated the goal the whole time. We are going to need depth. Everyone needs to practice the same amount of reps. So here's Odom talking about how important the depth is and how guys have stepped up.
I think, you know, you look at Jackson Woodard went out early with the targeting call. You know, we lost some good players today, and guys behind them stepped up and made big-time plays. He also, you know, as Jaden was saying, you got to be ready, because we've talked a lot in our program about it doesn't matter if you're a starter or a second-team guy, third-team guy, fourth-team guy. Okay, you're a play away from being the next one. And then you look at the way that we structured our practice throughout fall camp on two-spotting everything that we did. So it didn't matter if, you know, the ones and the fours got exactly the same amount of reps. The twos and threes on the other field did the same thing, and it's hard. That's hard to do as for a player. And then the organization that went into that for our coaches to be able to execute that, we got so many reps and we got a lot better as a football team through fall camp because we practiced that way. And I think that will continue to pay dividends for us, because we're going to need everybody in that locker room. You know, everybody's got a role. And when we embrace that and we understand how important that is, we'll continue to make positive steps.
All right, does everyone get what he's talking about there with practice?
Yeah.
So what they're doing, you would see the ones last year get like most of the action, and then you'd have a lot
except
of guys.
For the quarterbacks.
You'd have a lot of guys standing on the sideline. There's no one standing on the sideline now except for the next 11 that are waiting to go in who are also going to play. So what they do is on one field they have the ones – against ones, they have the fours against fours, and the other field they have threes, threes, two, twos, right? And they've got a big enough roster now. And that was one thing that Arroyo pointed to a lot. He's like, we just don't have the depth, you know, at three and four to really have, you know, practices where everyone's getting prepped. But they don't mess around now. Everyone gets a chance in practice. And then something I saw early in practice was you would have like 2 days of, you know, Cam Oliver mm-hmm. playing starting cornerback, and then 2 days later, you might have, you know, Ricky Johnson, who's on the three line at the time, then he's starting. And same thing, though. Jet Elad's not – he's playing with the threes, and then all of a sudden, 3 days later, he's playing with the ones. And each week, they're having more and more guys on defense. I forgot what the number was yesterday. I counted it up. I'll have to look it up again. But it was like players on defense who got 17 or more plays against Vanderbilt, it was like 19. That's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot. And generally, the guys who are coming in, they kind of – there might be a little drop-off, but they look prepared, and especially a quarterback. So I just wanted to point out that he said repeatedly, hey, everyone on the team is going to get a chance. I don't care about what you've done, how old you are, how young you are, if you're a true freshman. And it's proven out, like, guys who just never really got a chance or didn't do what they were supposed to do with the last coaching staff. They had a clean slate, and some of them were playing, and some are really contributing.
Well, one of the early positives I would say from Odom is that he's delivered on a lot of what he has said to the most part. You know, we part of like an extension of that was he talked about like cross-training a lot of these guys. You know, if you're going to play guard, then we'll put you a couple of reps to tackle. You know, we're going to get you ready to do sorts of different things.
He thinks one of the backups, Marcus Miller, can play all five positions, including yep. center, and he did play backup center when Jack Haas was down for a while in training camp. Anton Ambules played a lot of left tackle. He played a lot again this week. When he's not the left tackle and Jalen St. John is back, then Ambule might be playing guard if they need it.
Mm-hmm. And when you have a team like this where sometimes depth does fall off in terms of production, you've got to make sure that those guys are ready. Because in years past, as you have said, the second you start to dip into that, you've seen a stark drop-off. And at least early on through three games, when you see some of the reserves come in, you're not seeing that, and that is effectively good coaching.
right, rolling on here. Early start, 2 to 5 every Monday now. 2 to 5, we're heading off to Monday Night Football. Well, we got two games, but we're going to be carrying the second game, the Browns and the Steelers here on ESPN Las Vegas, and then our ex. Yeah, it still hurts. Derek Carr is in New Orleans. They are in Carolina. John said, does it? We'll see. We'll see. What if the Saints go out and win 11, 12 games? And, you know, we love PFF. What else do you like? DVOA?
No, not DVOA itself. Actually, the model doesn't use DVOA. It does use some of their other statistics, though. Okay. Adjusted line yards allowed.
We love the metrics on quarterbacks, so we'll be following that all year.
Completion percentage over expected.
Okay.
And EPA composite. Dropback success rate.
Are there interception-worthy passes in one of them?
Turnover-worthy plays is a statistic.
I love that. When a guy gets a touchdown on a touchdown pass, and you're like, that pass was actually ass. He got saved by the wide receiver. Well, that was a negative. You got a touchdown? That was a negative.
Well, the best part is the other way around where, you know, for example, last week when Jimmy Garoppolo throws a pass into the end zone and gets tipped up and picked off, he does not get a turnover-worthy play because that is not a turnover-worthy play. That is a thing. Which goes to, I have said this so many times, and I will say it again. They need to strike the interception, get rid of the interception, and instead just charge turnovers to guys. Should be a new statistic.
So Josh Jacobs yesterday, who's that? Whose fault? Where the linebacker basically mossed him?
I think that would be – actually, I can tell you right now. Hold on, give me a second. Jimmy Garoppolo got charged with that turnover with the play, I think. I'll have to look.
Okay.
My thing's not loading. Don't put me on the spot like that.
Through 2 weeks, way too early analysis of the NFC. Best teams in the NFC, 1, Eagles, 2, Niners, 3, Cowboys.
Is that by your
judgment? And there's a big drop-off down to the Cowboys.
Is that your by your judgment?
Yes.
So you didn't watch any football the last 2 weeks?
No, huh? I didn't watch the Jets and Cowboys.
The Cowboys were incredible yesterday. Yeah, by some measure, it's funny, in a vast majority of conversations, at the very least, the Jets are considered, what would you say in terms of ranking of defenses?
I'll say the floor.
What do you think?
A top five defense.
Okay. Top five. I would say top three, judging, you know, like licking the finger, testing the wind by just, again, reading stuff and looking at metrics from last year. Yesterday, I watched the Cowboys demolish that defense. Outside of the dropped pick six, which Sauce Gardner should have taken back, absolutely ran all over them in every facet, did everything they wanted. In fact, it got to the point where the game was so lopsided, Mike McCarthy on first and goals to go, were just like, let's just get out of here. Let's just run this ball up the middle and let's just kick field goals because they're not going to do anything and we don't need to really press this issue. But then I get like on social media, whoever said that we're the best defense? Like, are you serious? The Jets? It's like, it's why everybody thought the Jets were going to be awesome this year because they finally got a quarterback to go with their awesome defense. Long story short, the Cowboys, I don't think there's any question about this. They're the best team in the NFC at the very least.
No. You said the Cowboys destroyed the Jets' defense.
Yes, absolutely demolished them.
Zach Wilson, Dwayne Brown, and I almost called him his dad's name, that's the problem with this Nepo stuff. Nate Hackett destroyed the Jets' defense.
The Jets' defense. Interesting. How does that work?
They were on the field for 43 minutes.
Don't act like
it was
this.
43-17.
First drive, they took him right downfield.
Zach Wilson. Yeah, but that's one score. No, that's one score.
Steve.
They were competing.
In the first half, they were cutting through him like a hot knife through butter. They were demolishing them the entire game.
What was the score early in the third?
It was, I think, was it 18-10 at halftime?
It was an 18-10 game.
Yes. They scored 18 points at will.
The wear and tear crushed the defense.
The wear and tear. It was two quarters.
Yes. Getting pounded.
It was, Steve.
And quick possessions.
They went down.
The Jets' only touchdown was a freaking 6-yard pass that Garrett Wilson took the distance. That took no time off the clock.
Steve.
The first half destroyed them. The second half, they had nothing left.
From the first drive, they were destroying them.
No.
Yes.
No.
Immediately, the first drive, 12 plays, 75 yards, touchdown, 5 minutes and 41 seconds. After a 3-and-out, 14 plays, 78 yards.
I like that this is qualified as destroying. It's little by little, which is, that is impressive. That's not destroying a defense, but that is wearing them down and then getting the ball back every 30 seconds. Did not help the freaking defense of the Jets.
But you're to just, it's fine. Like, it was just because the offense stunk.
A lot of it is.
They scored on three of their first five drives. They were double-digit drive, 13 plays, 75 yards. They just went right down. They were doing everything they wanted. On third downs at one point, Dak Prescott was like 8 of 10 for over 100 yards.
What was second half time of possession? What was it, 28-2? What was it?
What, second half time of possession?
Yeah, let's look that up.
Well, okay, yes.
Can I you know what I'm setting up here? One, Zach Wilson sucks.
Of course.
And I said that last week, and when our friend in New York was flipping out, that
we're 60-yard touchdown bomb.
We're all, yeah, on a 6-yard pass. It was a 68-yard run. It was a 62-yard run on a 6-yard pass. Oh!
He tried his best.
Zach Wilson! He's behind all the time. He doesn't get the ball out quick enough. He's got no sense of what's going on in the pocket. By the way, the left side of his line is, it sucks. He's terrible. And you know what? I thank God yesterday after the game, because I was like, that's exactly what the Jets needed. He has to show that he sucks beyond belief. And this whole notion that, like, we're sticking with him. Don't. Don't. He told you last year he can't play. He stinks. And then he's also been dealt a raw deal. Dwayne Brown is 1,000 years old. And that was like good high school against bad high school. That, like, the gap between freaking Parsons and Dwayne Brown, that's ridiculous. Dwayne, a couple times he got beat so badly to start, like, there was a chance to have, like, a little recovery, and he's like, ah, forget it. Like, he is awful. I have to look back on the Jets draft. They literally, I don't know what they wound up with, 5 or 6 picks. Mm-hmm. All 6 should have been a tackle, an offensive tackle.
All freaking six. Pulling angels that year, and then they drafted all pitchers.
The other thing is, and I really don't want to get on the guy, but you just mentioned long drives. We just told you the score was 18-10.
Yeah.
The defense held up well enough to only allow a field goal. It's 21-10. Why are you still not running the ball? This is it. Hackett, this is it. You got to run. Oh. And you got to run to a fault where, like, at some point, you can't freaking stop running. It has to be overkill.
Can I
you
add
can't
to this?
Let this kid have the ball to throw.
I thought you didn't watch the game. Second, I want to add to this.
And now, Breece Hall's tweeting out stuff.
Well, here's the thing. Ball. Yes.
4 carries?
Why is Dalvin Cook a thing? Every time Breece Hall touches the ball, it's electric. Like, you think he's going to break something.
John, I don't care. I don't even care who gets the ball. Just one of them.
Well, you should.
The ball.
Dalvin Cook has been not good through the first two games.
I think Breece Hall is better. But in any case, you have to run the ball. Like, Rex Ryan is a moron. He really is.
No, I think
you watch him speak, and, like, he makes me sound like I'm a smooth speaker. And he's lazy.
Okay.
I like that he's fat and he likes snacks.
Why are we
but
going
no,
on Rex
cause,
Ryan?
Because Rex Ryan had a very limited quarterback in Mark Sanchez.
Catching strays.
He had a good defense. He does deserve to catch strays. Well, in this case, I'm actually giving him credit. But even as dumb as Rex was, he knew I have a good defense and I've got a good run game. We have no other choice but to win that way. We don't want to give Sanchez the ball. So if you're down 35-10, throw. If you're down 2 scores and it's a touchdown and a field goal, you keep running. So I'll defend the Jets defense. Let's see what they do coming up. If the moribund, freaking not athletic Patriots roll them up, then there's a problem. But I'm not worried about the defense. I'm worried about play calling. Don't friggin' throw the ball. Sorry. He stinks. Protect him. Go get Jameis Winston. Go get Minshew. Can't get Minshew now because now they need him. Go get a quarterback.
You're defending the Jets defense, but CeeDee Lamb never looked better.
Right? Also, I mean, you know who else deserved to catch strays? I'll say it right now. I don't think Robert Saleh's got it. I think he's too nice. When you see, because, like, to your point, he's, like, still sticking his neck out for Zach Wilson and trying to protect the kid.
That's what you do as a coach.
No, you don't.
Behind this, if someone has them on tape behind the scenes and they're like, yeah, I still believe in Zach Wilson, then everyone should be fired. I don't know what you're doing.
I want, like, the Bill, the Bills beat reporter who got caught talking about Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, you want to hide.
I want that if it was Robert Saleh just walking out. I was like, God, this guy sucks. What am I supposed to do? Just stop. Just pull the Band-Aid off. Tell him he sucks
and
move on.
I hate when owners come out and speak. If Woody Johnson came out and he's like, this kid sucks, I demand we go get quarterbacks. I'd actually be behind him, and I don't like Woody Johnson. But someone's got to do something. So congrats to the Cowboys. You beat up a team. Yeah, the other part of this, I know we're going long here. The other part of this too, though, if you're on defense and you're a professional, right? And you have pride. But you wonder at some point during the game, like after you see interception, freaking he's a second and a half behind the play. You just, when you're on the sidelines, you're like, this sucks. Like, I got to cover CeeDee Lamb after this. Like, what's the point if he beats me or not? We're not going to score. I'm not saying they're doing that.
You know, in the first half, Cowboys scored on three of their five drives. The other two were
But they
three.
Were long drives. It the took other, them a long time to do it.
The other were three and outs.
They nutted up.
The other three and outs.
Freaking Jets.
It's the best team in the NFC.
This audience is going to be so happy when they just blow, and then I do what I've done the last 5 years, and I don't talk about them at all.
Well, you said earlier you didn't watch the game, and then you were breaking it down play by play.
Talking about I didn't watch the game. I watched the game.
He said, "Damon, you are my witness
on
you
air."
You said it like 5 minutes ago before it started. Before you started ranting, you're like, "I didn't watch the game," and then 5 minutes later, you're breaking it down play by play.
I don't remember saying that. No, I believe me, I watched it. I try to compartmentalize it and put it in the back, like I didn't watch it, but no, I watched it.
I watched every second of it.
It was horrendous.
It was a contest play. somebody tweeted at me. I did my favorite weapon on social media. I call it the petty like. So I tweet out the model card every weekend because we use it for the Super Contest, and somebody just responded with Cowboys minus 9.5, like with like six laughing emojis. Second the game was over, just went back and liked the tweet.
Yeah, you do that. Why not? All right, on the way back, we got a lot of criticisms. You're blowing up the Cowboys. You think the Cowboys are the best team in the NFC. I do not.
Gassing them up.
Is the AFC West going to be won by a team with just 9 wins? How about the Chiefs? What is happening? Heading towards 5 o'clock, we'll have the second Monday Night Football game. The first one kicks off Derek Carr at the Panthers at 4:15. I just told the guys during the break, I was like, don't put the Jets on the rundown anymore. I tried to stand up. I'm actually sitting today, which I never do. But I tried to stand up, and my back like locked up because I was freaking grunting and yelling so much about the Jets. So I got to stay healthy. I can't do this. I can't do this.
Just go on walks every day. Those runners for people.
I looked like Juwan Taylor when I tried to move. Is that a good one? He's the left tackle. No, check that. Right tackle for the Chiefs. Now, it looks right now like the Chiefs are going to benefit from a division that could have a rough season. Chargers can't win close games and get third down conversions. We'll get to them because now Staley's starting to get pissed off. Good! Broncos don't look fixed to me. They're great defense against Sam Howell? Mm-hmm. Huh? That was terrible, and the Raiders looked terrible yesterday too. Dare we say that some Chiefs personnel decisions aren't going right? Because mm-hmm. they seem to hit on everything. So the aforementioned Juwan Taylor. Yikes.
Yep. First off, Broncos defense was on the field for a long time, so I think they're fine. Second, Juwan Taylor, 2 false starts, an illegal formation, back-to-back holds, and he got benched in the second half. So he actually did come back, but it seemed like one of those, I don't know if you remember in high school football, the glory days, but there were times like, there was a time I remember a moment where I committed like back-to-back penalties. In fact, one game the count was a silent count and I didn't know what a silent count was. And so I kind of just like, and I'm the center. So I'm like, all right, well, does that mean like literally the first sound? Like, what are we doing? And so I don't snap the ball. And it's one of those like, get Von Tomo out of there.
Yeah.
So I think it was literally one of those where they were just like, can you get this clown off the field? What are we doing? So they go and they yell at him and then they put him back in the game. But it's a real question because if he gets called for any of the penalties that he probably should have been called for against Detroit, and then you get the performance here against Jacksonville, you got real questions as to what you're doing because this offensive line does not look great. Patrick Mahomes got pressured in over 40% of his dropbacks against Detroit. Number was much better this time around against Jacksonville, but he was still running around quite a bit and getting pressured. I have, I think, real concerns about what this offensive line is going to look like for Kansas City as the season goes along. Yeah. Like, it's not great.
And, again, it's not good enough to respond, well, the division sucks, so what does it matter? It matters because their goal is not to win the division.
Right.
I mean, it is, but it's not. Like, this is one of the teams they're going to have to take out. We're going to have to be better than when it counts the most. And are they going to be?
I still think so. I mean, when you have Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce and a play caller like Andy Reid, and by the way, we should note, their defense looks like it might be like the best version of their defense in the Patrick Mahomes era. So Those are things that are going to carry you in a really long way. You know, like for the Jaguars in that game, they had nothing in the red zone against Kansas City, like at all. I think, what was the official stat for them in the red zone? I think they were that was their penalties. Excuse me. They were 0-3 on trips to the red zone, the Jacksonville Jaguars were. Now, some of that was Trevor Lawrence, but that defense is really good. So I think they have enough. But when you're talking about playing some of the best teams in the NFL and your offensive line is going to kind of be a nightmare that's committing a lot of penalties and giving up a ton of pressures, that's where it's going to really, I think, bug you.
Good for Kadarius Toney. Targeted 5 times, 5 catches. That had to improve or else.
Like Thursday, that Thursday game was such an anomaly.
Disaster.
Those are professional receivers. They're going to get better. That was not something. That was one of the things that kind of bugged me coming out of week one. It's like, oh, they're toast. Yeah. These guys can't catch. And it's like, okay, it all happened in like one game. I think everything's going to be fine.
364-1100, 364-1100. Giveaway time. We got Adam Sandler tickets. He's playing the MUA, Mick Ultra Arena, on Saturday, December 2nd. Tickets are on sale. If you want to grab your own, you don't win here. AXS.com, AXS.com. Adam Sandler playing the MUA, Mick Ultra Arena at Mandalay Bay. It's Saturday, December 2nd. DeMond's got a 2-pack. Call in right now, 364-1100, caller 7.
What's up? It's Tyler Bischoff from the Press Box coming up on the show tomorrow. What will the Raiders season look like? Week 1 or week 2? And will they actually be able to get the running game going? Will the defense ever show up? Plus, UNLV, this looks like a bowl team, doesn't it? Just like last year, though, they could start 4-1 and fall apart. And we still have a week to wait before the Aces' next playoff game. All of that is coming up tomorrow right here on ESPN Las Vegas, starting at 7 a.m.
Now, back to Cofield and Company in the Findlay Toyota studio on ESPN Las Vegas.
Well, I don't want to keep doing this, but boy, Deion and Colorado have elicited such a response with the hype before the season, then the hype after the TCU win, the Nebraska stuff with Rule and him going back and forth a little bit, Norvell trying to crap on him with the hat and the glasses, then the action during the game, which was dirty on both sides. Yeah, Travis Hunter got knocked out for 4 weeks on what was a bang-bang play, not a dirty hit. But Shedeur Sanders took a blast towards the end of the game, but he also tried to poke the same guy in the eye 2 quarters before that.
I haven't officially taken my stance here.
You can do it.
On dirty play or bang, bang play.
Bang, bang play. It's part of football.
So DeMond's staring at me because he's expecting dirty play.
He hit him with a shoulder in the chest. Put some weight on, brother.
After the play.
It's bang, bang. It's not like he didn't get 5 steps running up to him. It was like in
the
step.
He took 2?
Get out of here.
Okay.
I'll go back and watch a replay.
I watched it a bunch while you guys were talking about it.
The game is fast.
I'm officially – and actually I watched –
if you go in slow-mo, it looks like you can stop.
I watched new footage from the spot, like literally right there.
Mm-hmm.
And I have officially stepped into bang, bang play territory.
Yep. Oh, my God.
Yep. Now
you're too emotional about this team.
Here's the thing.
Everyone's getting all worked up. And by the way, they're the tough talkers. Oh, ready? Oh, they made it personal. Let's all chant it. They made it personal. Yeah, they did. They're going to take it personally. And then when you're on the field, Travis Hunter, and you're meeting up before the game, meeting up at midfield, and you're talking trash, okay.
Because here's the thing. When you actually watch like the footage, especially the angle that I watched, which is somebody on the sideline.
Hurt my shoulder.
Recording the actual play itself.
Yeah.
Was it a play that deserved to be penalized? Yes. But was it also a play that was within 1.5 seconds of the ball falling incomplete? Also, yes. So it can be both. Did the guy go over there to make Travis Hunter feel him? Absolutely. But was it like this play where it was 5 seconds after it fell incomplete and he was well out of bounds? No.
Basketball players like this guy.
Okay.
Golfers like this guy. Junior varsity.
He's also a pro wrestler throwing himself around the ring.
You know what you
got
to do? You got to protect your opponent. That's what we tell ourselves, okay?
Well, you know,
because we're not going out there to hurt each other.
Yeah, you don't in football. Not when you get crapped on all week about how it was going to be personal.
So maybe they should have just stepped up and played better. They had their chance. Jay Novell, peed down his leg. Had his chance to get the team.
They actually got too fired up, and they did have way too many personal fouls.
Mm-hmm.
And Norvell didn't manage the game very well.
No. I thought there were 2 opportunities that he screwed up. I was amazed because, look, at the very least, coaches can say we don't know the point spread, whatever. You do know the situation. And the situation is that you are the underdog coming in to the big bad Wolf's house, right? Everybody's there. Offset's on the sidelines screaming. The Rock is in the locker room. Kawhi Leonard's on the sidelines. You know what the situation is. You have a 4th-and-2 with the game on the line inside Colorado territory. You're up by 8. You get those 2 yards, you walk out of there, winners. That's it. This is what you came for. This is a rivalry game. And what does Norvell do? Punt it away. And here's the problem as well. Because people go, whoa, he's up 8. Yes. But the previous 3 drives, they had amassed over 120 yards of offense and had gotten field goals on all 3. They were moving the ball on you. So I don't know why you give them the ball back. So then we know what happens. They punt the ball back. They go down and they score. By the way, name escapes me. Kid who laid down the bang-bang play gets burned on the touchdown to tie the game. Right? Everybody's laughing at
karma.
That. Karma. There you go. Yep, everybody heard it. They go on and they tie it, whatever. You go to overtime. Then Colorado State gets the last crack of the first overtime. They score the touchdown. Why in the world do you kick the extra point to extend the game out? Again, 2 yards. End it. End them. You are the underdog. You have the opportunity. Go do it. You've got nearly 500 yards of offense. Do it. And then he kicks the extra point, and they go on to lose.
Like, his mama didn't teach him to go for 2.
I don't understand the non, like, just the timidness in those situations. Why wouldn't you go and do that? Do you disagree?
No. No, I go for the jugular. Yeah.
Right.
I think he normally coaches like that. I don't know why he locked up.
Lights were too bright.
The lights were too bright.
Now, that all said, let's put it in perspective, though. They were 24-point favorites, and when Mark Jones at the end of the game blurts out, do you believe now? Believe what? They're having a good season. They just beat a rival that they were 24-point favorites over. I'm not going to kill them, and I'm talking about the students because they were the ones rushing the field.
Oh, no.
But a lot of people did kill them.
They deserve to be killed. Not like literally.
Yeah.
But like, what are we doing? Like you talked about, right? You're talking about making it personal, coming into our house. Everybody expects him to blow it out. Everybody and their mothers is talking about Deion and Colorado winning by 50. They're 24-point favorites. You barely squeeze by. And by the way, here's the other thing, Steve. Can you really pretend like the program you're playing is irrelevant, but then also storm the field after you barely beat them?
Right.
Because they won 1 game last year.
You can't do that. You can't act like you're this high and mighty a program. We're here now. We're here. You should believe in this. But then as a 24-point favorite, you barely get by, and then you storm the field. I mean, because what happens—
But here's the thing. It's a rivalry game. The students don't know.
They didn't care about Colorado State, Colorado last year.
They didn't care about anything last year.
Right, that's what I'm saying.
They've cared about it in the past, and they've actually dominated the series. But in this case,
right.
Norvell lit the flame, so they were fired up for it. I really try to never get on kids for rushing the floor, rushing the court. It's their 4 or 5 years at school. They may not be big sports fans, and if it's a big moment for them in their time at the school, then rush the floor, rush the field.
But it's not a big moment. They're 24-point
favorite. But they don't know. It's a rival, and that maybe they're not all football
they
fans.
They know. Colorado
has, I think you.
Colorado is one of the best sports betting states in the country.
No, the students.
They have everything.
No, I'm sure students were walking around campus made it personal.
You think the 20-ish-year-olds had no idea what the point spread was?
RG3 said, Colorado fans storming the field after beating a team they were favored to beat is the clearest example of the hope that Coach Prime has brought to a fan base that hasn't won or had this type of spotlight in a long time. They're fired up. That's it. We don't have to grade who gets to run on the field.
No, yes, we do. Yes, we do.
But what I will grade is...
Because here's the thing.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do? So if they pull the upset against USC, you're going to rush the field. Because they're going to be at home. But you don't do it against Stanford, but then if they do it again against Oregon State,
they might do it every freaking game.
It's ridiculous. Back in my day, storming the field used to mean something.
Back in your day. Your day was not that long ago.
I've actually never,
that much.
And I've never stormed a field.
We do have to call on the carpet. Either he is buying into the little entertainment aspect, but the announcer Mark Jones to say at the end of the game, do you believe now? No, actually, I believe less. Either suggests to me that he is completely buying into the hype around this thing, or he has no awareness of point spreads going into a game, which is a cardinal sin for an announcer. You got to be able to frame what a win means. Mm-hmm. You have to know the point spread.
I don't think he has any idea what the point spread is.
I don't
so that's
so
a sin too. He also corrected himself and made sure after he called Coach Prime Coach Sanders. I mean, Coach Prime. Come on.